tonight we have asked Dano to share his experience, strength, and hope with us.
Hi, everybody. My name's Dano. I'm an addict. Well, I get to quit thinking about it now. It's out there in the hall, and Jeff said, you got 15 more minutes. I said, thanks a lot. That's 15 more minutes I get to be in my head. My head's like a bad neighborhood. I try to avoid going there alone and for any extended period of time. You know, you hang around here long enough, and you go to enough of these functions. And I don't know about you, but I can tell you about me. I like instant gratification, and I like approval. You know, and I look at all those wonderful convention speakers standing up there and making us all laugh and making us all cry and, you know, doing things uniquely. And there's a part of me that really, really wants to be like them. But see, then there's another part of me that is like this woman I knew, this woman named Lois. And Lois used to perform for a living. You know, she used to be Broadway, theater, singing, belting it out. And she used to do it, and she used to be scared to death while she did it, you know. And I used to do that in one part of my life, too, and I was also scared to death while I was doing it. And, you know, I just got to work to trust God, stay in the now, and just share. That's it, you know. I've tried that other thing, and it's like it always comes out contrived, and that doesn't work. You know, it always comes out as something other than, you know, what the best of my intentions were. I am incredibly grateful to the people that sat around a table at some point back in July of 1953 and said, "This isn't enough. We got to figure out a way to make this thing work for us. We got to figure out a way to make these steps work for us. And we've got to bring this thing that we've found to addicts, to people like us. However, in doing so, they unfortunately broke one of the great spiritual laws that the universe is founded on. If it works, don't fix it. And we've been in love with fixing stuff around here ever since. But, you know, they did that, and they laid a foundation and set up, took these steps and set up a program for people like me so that when I got here, however many years later, I had the opportunity to stay clean. Guys, I got to tell you something. Addicts don't get clean. We don't change. Okay, you can never trust us. We're always going to stab you in the back and twist a knife when it's coming out. Okay, and if society had their way, we would just as soon go away. That was the message that I got when I first wanted to get clean. Okay, I was on active duty in the military, and I said, for the first time, I'm going to fill out this form and tell them the real deal. And they said, no, we're not going to send you to treatment. It'd be a waste of a bed. Addicts don't get clean. Addicts don't change. Okay, we're not willing to make that investment in you. Tell you what we will do. Piss positive one more time, we'll throw you out. How's that for your program? You know, that's all they could offer me. You know, that woman I mentioned, Lois, she's my mom. And she died with many, many years' experience around another 12-step fellowship and 15 consecutive years of sobriety in that fellowship. And you know, she was very much my Eskimo, you know. I had a very limited ability to put things together at that point in my life, but what I could see is that there was something similar about the way she got loaded and the way I got loaded, and that I needed to find a solution. And ultimately, pursuing that led me to the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. And, hell, that must have been in like June of 1983. And I didn't get it right away. I had these things called reservations. Anybody got a reservation in here? I had one earlier tonight. It was for the motel. You see, a reservation is something we set aside for use at a future date. Okay? And the reservations that I had were what got me out the door for a little while. You know, it was real simple. You guys had some suggestions for me. Okay? One of those suggestions was that I might want to think about not having a roommate who got loaded. And then I heard that there were no musts in NA. There's musts. And these aren't suggestions. Okay? These are suggestions, much like stop, drop, and roll is suggested for somebody who's on fire. Okay? See, it was all too easy for me to turn my head to the right 90 degrees, sorry, to the left 90 degrees and say, Ron, give me that. And that was it, you know? And then I had a marvelous idea that said, you know, I tend to keep a pretty low profile. If I just shut up, I can take my key tag a little later on and nobody will know. It doesn't work like that. For some reason, until I opened my mouth about my relapse, I could not stay clean. You know, I would go home with the best of intentions and get loaded. You know, I would go to the next meeting and think I couldn't tell you guys because certainly I would be letting you down beyond belief, and I'd go home and get loaded. Okay? And it wasn't until I owned it that I was able to go home and go to sleep and get a day clean. That's all there was to it. And for me, that was the key element that I believe is the real hallmark for any addict. Definitely this addict, but any addict starting recovery. And that's surrender. Okay? Without surrender, without a 100% cessation of my activities in trying to manage my life, I'm not staying clean. Okay? That's all there is to it. I've got to surrender. I'm not going to write an inventory. You know, I'm not going to trust a higher power. I'm not going to recognize insanity in my life. I'm not going to try and, you know, make any sort of amends or anything like that. If I have not reached that surrender, you guys, it's not going to work. Not going to work at all. And I think that was my moment of surrender. And certainly, make no mistake, there have been plenty of instances, you know, in which I have, you know, reached out to hold on, acted on self-will, those kinds of things. But you know what? When it all comes down to it, I always got to let go again. And I've always got to surrender again. And I've always got to quit trying to manage the damn thing again. It doesn't work like that. You know, and the last time I got loaded was October 7th, 1983. You know, and I got to tell you, there is probably nobody in this room more stunned at that than I am. Okay? I have done everything. I take that back. I have done almost everything wrong that you can in recovery. Okay? And stayed clean. Okay? I'll tell you the one thing I haven't done. I have not 13-stepped a newcomer. Okay. I didn't say I didn't think about it. See, we can chuckle about that, but I got to tell you something. One of the first things that was very strongly impressed on me by my brothers in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, is to treat the women around here like my sisters. Okay? And that we need to come in here and we need some time and we need a break. And nobody ever died in Narcotics Anonymous because they didn't get laid. Of either gender. Okay? And it was incumbent on me that if I was going to sit around here and start doing this thing, that the minute I made this thing part of my life, I was representing Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and that I needed to live that. And there were other things that went into it, you know, beyond that. There was being a service. You know, one of those suggestions that they gave me was that I stand out in front of the meeting and say hello to people as they walked in the door. Hi, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm Dan. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm Dan. I'm doping. Welcome to Narcotics. And I really felt foolish. Okay? I felt very, very foolish. I felt real foolish until a time when I went to a meeting in a little bit of a different geographic area, and suddenly there were all these people there that already knew me. Okay? Oh, yeah, you're the guy from over at the Sunday night Ohana meeting. You know? They had a plan. Okay? The people who came before me were sharing their experience, strength, and hope with me. Okay? You know, this recovery thing has been consistently changing and growing and developing in my life. What's interesting, though, is that for me, for some reason, I always reflect back on, I always end up back at those initial early lessons, you know, that I learned that are saving my ass on a daily basis, consistently. Those are the ones that are keeping me clean. You know, I was having a real difficult time with the third step. Very difficult time. I did not see as there was going to be any way that, you know, a power greater than myself would ever actually intercede in my life, that I would never get to experience, you know, this idea of turning my will and my life over to the care of, you know, God as I understood him. And I had this obsession going. And we all know what obsession's about, that fixed idea that takes us back time and again. It wasn't taking me back to a drug. It was taking me back down another dark and empty corridor of my life. And no matter what I did, once I got my head started in that direction, okay, I couldn't stop, okay? There was this massage parlor on my way home from the Friday night meeting. Okay, not really on my way home, but sort of. And the deal was is that the minute I got this idea in my head, this is before GPS, I could visualize, I could be plotting the course and see the ATM, drive around the dark part of the parking lot so I could see what was going on there, and then I'd feel like shit, you know, because I'd be patronizing a woman who was selling herself, you know, I'd be participating in prostitution, and I'd look at somebody who had a seat waiting in one of these rooms. And I didn't feel good about myself. But no matter what, I couldn't stop what I was doing. I was locked into obsession. That fixed idea. You know, I was locked into compulsion. You know, that having started the process with one, I had no power over where it was going to go. And I was sitting there. I remember this is a Friday night meeting. I got clean in Hawaii, and it was at this hospital, and I was sitting there, and I was deep in prayer, man. I was, you know, the forehead and the eyes, and you know, God, I got to get through this one, and I got to turn it over to you. And, you know, some one of you guys, some rude addict, came up to me while I was obviously deep in prayer and said, "Hey, man, want to go out and get coffee after the meeting?" And scared the shit out of me, okay? I jumped out of my skin, okay? And I woke up the next morning realizing that I had gone out for coffee after the meeting and then over to somebody's house and then driven back up to the house and gone to sleep. And I went, "Now, wait a minute. That had never happened before. I was locked into my obsession and compulsion. I'd never been able to not act on it in the past. And here I was sitting praying, and I thought this man interrupted my prayers when actually this addict answered my prayers. Okay, this addict was sent, because that's the way it works around here, okay, by a power greater than myself that I can barely understand, okay, that needed me to work through one of you guys, because that's the way, only way it was going to happen, okay? And that was a big lesson, okay? You guys are my connection to my higher power. That's all there is to it. You know, that book is only so thick. and there's no pictures in it. You guys are the pictures that I need to see in my basic text, okay? You're the pictures. I have had other spiritual experiences in my life that I can't even begin to explain. God sent me to Kansas for 8 months. Apparently it was on a spiritual quest because every time I turned around in Kansas, I'd worked the steps with my sponsor. And oh, there's another wonderful story. My sponsor in Hawaii says, here, let me write you this guy's name down, name and phone number. Call this man when you get to Kansas. He's somewhere nearby you. I don't know exactly where. Call this man. He might be a good sponsor. I'm like, yeah, right. I go to Kansas. I do my thing. I'm living my life. I'm getting a sponsor. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing my thing. And I'm going through my wallet standing there at the payphone one day looking for my sponsor's phone number. And out comes a slip of paper with my old sponsor's handwriting on it, written on which is my current sponsor's name and phone number. Okay? Every time I worked the steps while I was in Kansas, I learned that expectations cause resentments. Every time I turned around, I'd get expectations over people and I'd get resentful. Okay? Expectations cause resentments. I figure about the time that I got that right, I was done with the military. And I left Kansas about as fast as that little Volkswagen Rabbit pickup truck could take me. These are the kind of miracles that I got to experience early on in recovery that if I make room for them, and they happen in my life now. You know, they really do. They happen in my life today. And they're the foundations that allow me to stay clean on a daily basis. I started working the steps with a man there in Hawaii, and he taught me some basics and some things that, you know, carry through with me today. And from everything that I've understand, he has had a hard time staying clean, you know, and he hasn't been able to put together consecutive amounts of clean time, you know. Read that basic text. That's not the issue. You know, the basic text says real clear, you know, that sometimes we look at a relapse, you know, as being synonymous with failure, and long periods of clean time is synonymous with success, and it's not always that case, okay? I tell you what, though. The lessons that I learn by going through them clean give me the lessons that I need to go through the next thing that comes through my life by staying clean. I need that, okay? You know, there's every once in a while, somebody's heard it in here or somebody said it in here. The only person with the most more clean time than me is whoever got up first in the morning, you know? And there's a grain of truth to that. A grain. Get some. Walk through life on life's terms. That's what I was challenged with. Walk through life on life's terms without picking up. I mean, I couldn't pick up. I couldn't walk through a day without getting loaded just because the sun came up. Okay? I mean, my disease was just insanity. That's the way it was. I had to get loaded every day on something. Get some. You know? I found myself in Vail, Colorado, well into ski season, fired from 2 jobs, homeless, with 2 cats. I got through it. And I didn't have to eat the cats. Okay? I got through it. You know, I called sponsors. I talked to people. They said, trust God. Stay in the now. Work steps. Call some. Staying clean for a long time around here has also included staying clean through periods where I have done absolutely nothing, less than nothing, to deserve this gift that I have, okay? And I can tell you, I recently came out of a long period of that, which probably comprised about half of my recovery. You know, I took a look at my life. This was not the last convention, but the convention before it, and I realized that for about the last 10, 12 years, okay, I'd been coasting, okay, that my life I had put myself in a situation, okay, where it was real easy for me to not do anything to stay clean, except just stay clean. I got into some new obsessions, some new compulsions. I found this rather interesting pastime that generated a natural compound in my body that got me loaded. It's this thing called skydiving. Any jumpers in the room? Okay. Yeah, you know, I would have taken the clue after jump 20 that I broke my ankle, and then jump 25 when I dislocated my shoulder. You see, I started skydiving and paid for it by stealing money out of the cash register at work. Okay? That's insanity. That is like the ultimate test of karma. You know? Not healthy. That became my fellowship. Yeah, I called a sponsor every once in a while. I get to meetings on a quarterly basis, whether I needed them or not. Once a year, I'd go to California, see this other friend of mine who was equally obsessed with the sport as I was. You know, we'd make some jumps, trade coins in free fall, and go back our separate ways. And I was obsessed. And there was this guy in a sport who was very much like a mentor for me. And I remember at one point we were sitting around his shop and we were talking, and I was just kind of talking the way, you know, you sort of talk to a mentor or a sponsor. And all of a sudden I looked at this man and I saw that he had a look on his face. I might as well have been speaking Greek, okay, or some other lost language, because I was trying to relate to him on a level that he was just completely ill-equipped to relate with. And I went, oh man, this guy's not a sponsor. You know, he's not my sponsor. He's a good friend, a mentor, helped me through some things, but he's not my sponsor. You know, so I went home and called my sponsor and probably didn't call him back for 6 months. I had plenty of warnings during that period of time. You know, I went to a seminar that dealt with a very specific part of the sport, and there were some fellas there that I really, really wanted to impress, that I wanted to be part of. You know, some guys whose respect I wanted to earn, and we got in the car, and they were giving me a ride back home, when suddenly it became apparent that there was a very, very, let's call it a delicate situation that needed my attention. You see, they didn't know how to roll, and I did. And it was that far away. It wasn't the prettiest joint I ever rolled. More than a little on the pregnant side. But let me tell you something. Being that close to it sent a shiver down my spine. Made me break out in a cold sweat. Okay? Made my nuts shrivel up against the bottom of my spine. To where... That's the only way I can describe the raw fear that I experienced in that moment. And I said, you know what, go ahead and let me out here, about 30 miles away from home, you know, with 30 pounds of gear and all this crap, because I had to get out of the car, okay? I had to get out of the car, hitchhike the rest of the way home. I could not be in the car with them. It was too close, okay? I went through a period, those are really good examples of what that period of my life was like, okay? You know, I lived in fear. I was never comfortable with myself. You know, I was doing some of the footwork, but, you know, some of the footwork without the spiritual connection, you know, sometimes, it's just not working. You know, I was chair of our area up in Flagstaff until I was reasonably politely invited to step the hell down and get out of the way. What can I tell you? I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I was out of my state of surrender, you know? And shortly before that convention of, what I guess that'd be 2004? Scott, help me, timekeeper, with 2004 or something like that? I made a commitment to go 90 and 90. Okay. You clean for a while? Been doing it for a while? Need to recharge your recovery? Need to put some priorities in order? That's what I got out of doing 90 and 90, okay? For 90 days, I had to turn my approach to life on its ear. What happened is that I had to, instead of make excuses for not going to a meeting, I had to find a way to go. I had to make that my priority. I had to regularly place my participation in this fellowship and my recovery ahead of other things every day for 90 meetings. Here's a good thing. Okay, see, if you assign it to yourself, it's a little different than when your sponsor assigns it to you. Okay, you see, as a self-assignment, I was able to count meetings when, because of professional responsibilities to my boss, I could show up late. Okay, when a family reunion was happening in the middle of it, I was allowed to miss meetings while I was at that family reunion. I mean, remember, I've got to find balance in my life, and taking myself out to the parking lot to get loaded is about as self-centered behavior as removing myself for 2 hours from my, you know, family's family reunion, you know, so that I can do my meeting. Remember, my disease is progressive. My recovery has to be progressive too. Okay. If I'm running from this disease with the same sense of panicked urgency that I had when I first walked in the doors, odds are there's a shortcoming somewhere in my program of recovery. It's got to be different. You know, I look around and I see the way we are in service, and it's like, you know, there's, I hate to say it like this, but there's developmental stages, okay? Greg knows what I mean. Okay, there's developmental stages, and it's like you sit there, and if you've been around this thing for a couple of decades, and you watch one of those, what's that?
He's still developing.
Thank you. Stay there. You know, you hang around here for a few decades, and you see some of the same arguments come around the table a few times, you know, and then you watch, and you realize it's the same people with the same amount of time who get into that, you know, get into that debate and that discussion, that argument, and you're like, damn. You know? Huh. What's up with that? It must be something in the coffee. You know? It's not. Our disease is progressive. You know? Well, within certain loose boundaries, we all progress through these things. That 90 meetings in 90 days that I went through was an incredible awakening. Okay? And I have to tell you that when I first got clean, one of the things that they told me was is that anything I didn't surrender, okay, was going to be a problem in my life until I surrendered it. And I said, sure, no problem, got it. I know. How many of you have sponsees that say, I know a lot? I know. I got to that state of surrender again, and I realized that there had been an awful lot of pain in my life regarding money. I was willing to turn everything in my life over to my higher power but my wallet. Okay? I'll take the checkbook. Well, it doesn't work like that. Okay? Self-will doesn't do me any good in my financial affairs, you know, any more than self-will does me good in my romantic affairs. Interesting concept, that. I had to walk through a lot of things really, really fast, and it was amazing the miracles that happened for me as I reached that surrender. You know, I was in the process of buying this house from this woman, and there were a lot of things that were going on that were completely out of my control, but one thing that was in my control is that I was paralyzed by fear. I was paralyzed by fear of actually filling out the papers and sending it in to the people because they might say no. Of course, on the other hand, they might say yes. Okay, and then I got this thing that I'm joined to, you know. What's happened as I walked through that, you know, as I sent in those papers is, you know, lo and behold, I got approved as I started making the payment on a regular basis, you know, is not so much that money started falling out of the heavens, but guys, I have reached a sense of peace and reasonable tranquility when it comes to what I think about money that I didn't think would ever be possible for somebody like me. You know, I reached a peace, a point in time where I didn't reach in and meddle enough so that I didn't create any havoc, that all of a sudden, you know, my income outpaced my outgo. You know, and I got a little breathing space. And I didn't have to get too wacky with it. You know, and the more that I just kept showing up and kept trusting God and walking through these things, is the more these little miracles started happening in my life. And what I came to see is that they're the same miracles that were happening in the very beginning. I mean, I can't tell you how long I ran around this room, these rooms, talking to people saying, I just don't feel this thing with the same passion, the same fire in the belly that I did when I first got here. You know? I said that for years. You know, I really missed the intensity that I felt this thing. And lo and behold, all I had to do was get back to those basics. And it came back into my life like that. You know? It came back into my life and it became true for me. You know? How long am I supposed to do this for? So then in the third week of my recovery, there's newcomers in the room. You know what? Newcomers, you are the most important people. But no, we are hopefully not going to baby your asses. Okay? If you baby an addict, you bury him. Okay? That T-shirt's edited. Y'all know what it's supposed to say on the bottom. It's suggestions versus musts. Okay? You know why we say newcomers are the most important person? Because if you're new and you're in this room tonight, you've got a unique aspect to this message that only you are going to be able to carry to the next addict that isn't even here yet. You know, to the next addict that's still thinking, that's still practicing, that's still out there getting loaded, that's still in their insanity. You know, my sponsor was the only guy, Peter was the only man who could first convince me of my insanity. Peter, I really don't see my insanity. You know, I'm in the military, I've got a little rank, I'm doing my thing, I show up. He says, you know, you cook your freebase over a naked light bulb at an open window, and then you go, freebase is like do-it-yourself crack, for those of you who are too young. You do this under a naked light bulb and then go into the closet in the room with the foil on the windows to smoke it. You don't see the insanity in that? Okay, maybe a little. He's the only person that could have told me that, you know? He's the only person that could connect with me on that level. And at one point, he was a newcomer, and there was somebody that was connecting with him on that level. So if you're new, that's why you're the most important person here. We might get you a cup of coffee while you're easing into this thing, you know? We're going to be a little patient and tolerant with some of the newcomer behavior. But you know what? You'd be around here for a while. There are some standards, some simple acts of behavior, you know, some simple ways of showing up and doing this thing that are incumbent on all of us, you know. We need you here. If you're in a state of surrender and you feel like getting loaded, the phone doesn't weigh 300 pounds, okay? You call somebody. I tell the newcomers that I talk to and the men that I sponsor, it's like, you know what, just call. I don't care if you get loaded afterwards. Call just to see if it's a good idea. Run it by somebody. Typically, the addict that's willing to call and say, is this a good idea? Is not an addict who wants to go out and get loaded. They're in surrender. You know, that disease is talking to them. Yeah, my recovery has to be progressive because you know what? My disease sure is. My disease used to scream at me, you know, used to scream at me. Today it whispers things, you know. Maybe you're not really an addict and it was a mistake all those years ago. When my disease is feeling really weak and it's feeling really dangerous, it'll say things like, hey, you're fat. I was visiting my sister over Christmas, and I've been having a real hard time sleeping, okay? And that's a real difficult place to be. you know, getting a couple hours of sleep and then some fitful sleep, and it's a rotten place to be. And she says, you know, I went to the doctor and he gave me this prescription for this. It's like a mood enhancer, a mood calmer, and I take like a quarter of them and I go to sleep, and it's like I get a great night's sleep, and I'm sitting there brushing my teeth and I go, you know, maybe she got a quarter of that she could share with me. That's my disease. Okay? We're addicts. Somebody's got a prescription out there. It's got their name on it. It's their business. It's none of mine. Okay? If I go to my doctor and I say, I'm an addict, I'm having a hard time sleeping, this is what my life is, this is the way I'm eating, this is my exercise, and he determines a course of treatment, okay? Remember, this is all predicated on the fact of me saying I'm an addict. That's the first thing we're saying, not the last thing. That's a different story. Asking my sister for, that's my disease, okay? It's my disease. It's whispering to me. The miracle is this. If you want to stay clean, if you don't want what you have anymore, you never, ever have to get loaded ever, ever again. Period. End of conversation. You know? That's the one blatantly stated promise of Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? That's the one blatantly stated. There's a lot of promises in our basic text. Okay? That's the one that uses the term promise with it. You never got to get loaded again. If you've been around here for a while, and you are not enthused and excited and motivated by your recovery and the opportunity to wake up one more day and not have to get loaded and be a part of this wonderful worldwide fellowship that has the opportunity to change lives, you can get back to that, okay? You don't have to stay in that place anymore, okay? You can go forward from there without having to get loaded, without having to stay in that miserable place. And it started for me with going back to those basics, you know, of what I had to do to stay clean when I first got here. A new year is starting. Solstice has come and gone. The days are getting longer and longer. Pretty soon you won't be able to get me to come down to Phoenix on a bet. It'll be that time of year again. But you know what? We're all here tonight. And people who want to go out and get loaded don't show up to the activities room of a funky church in, is it South Central Phoenix? In South Central Phoenix to hang around on New Year's Eve, you know, and do the countdown and say Happy New Year, okay? People who want to get loaded, they go out and get loaded. We're here tonight. We're part of the solution, you know? If you look around, the person next to you is the miracle, and you're their miracle, you know. Jeff, thank you very much for calling me and telling me that this opportunity existed and ask if I was willing, you know. I'm very grateful to be able to come down here and share with you guys. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Dano.